Blog Talk Radio.
Praise and thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe-o. Peace and blessings, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone tonight to the Sign of the Times
with brought to you by New Power Radio, the UAC. I am Queen Dara, and I'll be hosting tonight along with my host, Queen Tahira, when she gets in. Tonight we're going to have a show, once again, that will be a continuation from last week's show from the ladies from the Mississippi who are experiencing a lot of hardship while being incarcerated. Tonight's show will be talking about the cruel and unusual punishment that these ladies endure on a regular basis. So as we listen to the show, I want everyone to take in consideration the type of cruelty that these women are experiencing that is violating their rights under the Eighth Amendment. And tonight in the host queue, I would like to bring in LaShonda from Mississippi. LaShonda, are you in queue?
Hello.
LaShonda, how are you?
I'm blessed today. You good?
I'm good. Peace and blessings to you and to the ladies of the NDO too.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say that again.
I'm sorry, I said peace and blessings to you and the ladies of the NDOC.
Oh, to you also.
Okay, and do you also have your other co-host with you tonight?
Yes, ma'am, she's here.
Okay, would you like to go ahead and introduce her, please?
To her or to the show? To what we
introduce her.
On.
Yeah, introduce her to the show, and then you can go ahead and bring in, and start the show and bring in, you know, what we're going to discuss tonight.
Okay, well, as you all know, I'm Sister LaShonda, and I'm joined here tonight by another co-host named Sister Zane. And I'm about to put her on so you all can, she can introduce herself to you all. We're working by one phone. We're down to one phone. And we just ask you all to be patient with us because we have to pass it. All right, let's go.
Hello, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I just like to share a little story with you. I have been incarcerated in the Mississippi correctional system for about 7 years now, and I've experienced on multiple occasions different varieties of police brutality in addition to the different things that I've witnessed and fortunately not had to be a part of. But yeah, I just wanted to say hello to y'all. And, yeah, we are working with one phone, so we do appreciate your patience. And I'm going to give you back to Sister LaShonda.
Hello.
That's me. That's me. Well, Sister LaShonda, why don't you go ahead and begin to open up the show on the reason why we're on here tonight regarding the dehumanization of, you know, of you ladies under cruel and unusual punishment. So go ahead and give the listening audience an idea of why we're on here tonight.
Okay. Well, tonight, as Queen Dara stated, we are doing the Stop Dehumanizing Us Through Cruel and Unusual Punishment by the Means of Excessive Force. But before we begin, I would like to say that last week someone asked a question about whether or not the women was being group punished. I misspoke when I stated that they have not been through that, because after the show, a few ladies came to me and stated that they had been group punished by loss of their electricity and their ice for a week. Plus, they had been placed in sub-freezing weather with on their night clothes on for 5 hours. Excuse me. And they've lost their television, according to group punishment also. But tonight, June the 4th, 2006, we would like to be educating everyone on the constitutional right of those incarcerated, plus speaking out about dehumanization through excessive force, a different measure of the Eighth Amendment that's being violated. Excessive force means more force than is justified in this situation. Many of you are aware that the Eighth Amendment forbids cruel and unusual punishment and is the most important amendment for those incarcerated. It has been interpreted to prohibit excessive force and guard brutality. A use of force is excessive and violates the Eighth Amendment when it is not applied in an effort to maintain or restore discipline, but is used to maliciously and sadistically cause harm. It is important for those who are incarcerated to know what excessive force is. Excessive force is is any physical contact by a guard that is meant to cause harm rather than keep order. Under the Federal Tort Claims Act, you can sue for negligence or for intentional torts like assault and battery. Assault and battery often go together, but they are two separate torts. An assault is when someone does something that makes you fear that they are about to harm you. It is a threat. If that becomes a touch, like if a guard hits, kicks, or beats you, that is a battery. A battery is an offensive touch or contact where some kind of force is applied. The standard for battery is generally the same as the constitutional claim for excessive force. Along with the United States Constitution and your state constitution and federal and state law, another potential source of protection for those incarcerated is international law. The United States has ratified 3 human rights treaties that address the rights of those incarcerated. The Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhumane, Degrading Treatment or Punishment, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. According to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 5, no one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment. Many women here at the Central Mississippi Correctional Facility have endured assault and battery. I am a recipient of battery. In April 2015, the female K-9 officer used excessive force by hitting me in the back of my head with a black metal blunt object just to take a phone out of my possession. Excessive force, corporal punishment, unusual punishment, and institutional abuse is prohibited according to the Standard Operating Procedure 20-05-01, Protection from Harm. We must know that within rights for offenders is the right to a safe environment. Many of us have been subjected to all of the above. Not only have many of the females here been physically battered, they have also been sprayed with chemical agents without justification. This method of force should be used when restoring order. This method shall not be used where there is no risk involved. Yet the staff here, when noticing someone off their rack, run in aiming these large spray cans like they're automatic weapons, pointing them directly between your eyes while yelling and screaming what they are going to do to us. This is cruel and unusual punishment and contribute to mental abuse. With that being said, Sister Zane, you have just recently been subjected to guard brutality. Would you like to share your story with us before we open up the lines to the people?
Yes, Sister LaShonda, I would. This is actually an ongoing scenario. I intend to press charges in this case because it has gotten to such a point of ridiculousness. You know, a lot of times, even though we hear these stories about police brutality and, you know, different things happening, we don't necessarily believe that it's really happening. Like, I was raised under the premise, the belief system that the government, you know, was on your side and was out to help you, then, you know, no matter how bad it got, that at the end of the day, you know, they would have your back. But that is unfortunately not the case, as I have been witness to firsthand. In May, I was suffering from a medical condition that was plainly visible. I had developed an abscess on my arm, and our lack of medical treatment is another thing that we're going to address next week, as a matter of fact. I had asked a certain staff member if she could please call the clinic for me so that I could, you know, be sane about it, because it was possibly, you know, something that might have been contagious. And she refused to acknowledge that I even was making the request. She put plastic up over the windows of the guard tower so that she could not see out and we could not see in, which is a violation of several privacy and security measures that they have in place here already. So she came in a few minutes later to call people out for the case manager, and I took advantage of the opportunity to show her my arm, you know, so that she could see that it was, in fact, a legitimate concern and not something that I was making up to get attention or anything, as, you know, people sometimes do. She told me that she didn't give a cuss word about me, and all I can say is, she said, I don't give a fuck about you, and tried to slam a door in my face, and I held it open with my foot at the risk of damage to my foot, which fortunately didn't happen. And I said, well, I don't give a fuck about you either, but you still need to call the clinic, you know, acting like a juvenile. But, you know, at that point I was infuriated. So she slammed the door, and I went back and I went to the phone to try to call my parents to see if maybe they could get somebody's attention because I was in risk of losing my arm. It was my dominant arm, and, you know, of course, I needed that. So I, when I was on the phone, she opened the door back up and came in screaming obscenities at me, racial slurs and et cetera, telling me that I was white trash and all kinds of other things. And so I got in her face and, you know, got on the same level as she was on and was screaming back at her, which was not the right response on my part. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you do what you, you know, it's a reactive, you know, action on my part, which was a mistake. And I deeply regret that because it might have, you know, caused more heat in the situation than was absolutely necessary. But her response was to spit in my face, and I put my hand up over my face and wiped the spit off of my face, and she shoved me, and I shoved her back because the body's natural instinct, you know, to being assaulted is to, you know, is to fight back, unfortunately. Well, at that point, she punched me in my face, and so then I hit her back because, once again, it's the body's instinct, you know, is to defend itself, and then we were fighting, you know, and she, I was fighting defensively, and she was fighting offensively, like she had lost her mind, honestly. And finally, another officer came off the tower and intervened, you know, grabbed my wrist, at which point, you know, I stopped being combative because as far as I was concerned, the issue was over with. And while my hands were restrained, the person, her name is Officer Dupree, continued to attack me. She jumped over the other officer, like shoved her hands over her shoulders and continued to punch me in the face, at which point I finally walked away. I told the other officer, please let me go. I'm not trying to fight you. I'm not being combative. I just would like to leave. Please let me go. She let me go. She was a more understanding person than a lot of the personnel here. So then I walked to my bed. The officer who had restrained me came up and handcuffed my hands behind my back. I don't know if that's procedure or not, but that's what happened, and led me out into the foyer area. The officer who had attacked me, Officer Dupree, then continued to try to attack me while my hands were cuffed behind my back. And I was forced to get one of my hands out of the cuffs so that she would stop trying to attack me while I was defenseless, because I know that that is not in any way okay by anyone's standards. And the funny, amazing part about all this is it happened on camera. There are security cameras in our foyer area and in our zone area that people monitor at all times. And not only that, they record the activities that they monitor. I was written up and sent to lockdown for this, where I remained for 26 days. I wrote deputy commissioner, the commissioner, the American Civil Liberties Union, and it was only when they noticed that I was writing important people that I was finally released from lockdown. I had a disciplinary hearing about the write-up that I received where they found me guilty of the violation. I asked them on what grounds they were finding me guilty. They said my guilt was based on an incident report filed by Officer Dupree, which stated that she had come into the zone and that for no reason whatsoever I pushed her, which had they viewed the video footage, they would have seen that was an obvious lie. I asked them, had they seen the video footage? They said, no, they had not. I said, had the investigators seen any of the video footage? They said, no, why would they watch the video footage? We don't watch it for every little thing. And I said, maybe, you know, perhaps to gather evidence, they would have viewed the camera footage. They said, no, they had not. And, gave me no opportunity to sign my paperwork or anything else, put me back in lockdown where I remained for another 16 days. At that point, I continued to write the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, and the ACLU. At this point, I've still been found guilty. The guilty verdict has not been overturned. The criminal investigations division here has downloaded the video footage for what purpose, I do not know, and I can only imagine, I can only assume that it's not to help me, as nothing else in the situation has occurred to help me. And I intend to press charges against her, and I only hope that the mountain that I'm now up against because of this is not as insurmountable as it seems.
Yeah. Well, you this is Sister LaShonda back on. Are you here?
Hey, sis. Yeah, go ahead. You're fine.
All right. Well, there's another young lady who has been battered with, she's been assaulted, battered, and all that by the guards here. And she would like to share her story also. Her name is Sister Juice. Hello, how you doing?
Welcome to the Congress Times, and we'd like to, you know, thank you for coming on and sharing your story, you know, knowing that, you know, it's hard, you know,
yeah.
And you know, and that could somehow or another, you know, come back on you. But we do appreciate you coming on, so why don't you go ahead and tell us the details of your story.
Well, I got something like Camber, and I had incident at home, and it was bothering me, and I needed to talk to her about it. But she didn't have time to talk, so I waited till she come back, and she still didn't have time to talk to me. So I went to her again, and I was like, Camber, may I talk to you? She was like, y'all inmates get on my nerve, and it did something to me. So I said, well, Camber, I'm going through something at home, and I really need to talk to you. And she was like, well, I don't have time to talk to y'all, because every time you turn around, y'all always got a problem. I said, well, Kimber, every time I come to you, you're always telling me a story that you're going to come back and you don't come back. So she was like, well, young lady, who's you talking to? And I was like, Kimber, I'm trying to explain to you what's going on. She's like, you going to go in the zone? I was like, yes, ma'am, I'm going to go in the zone. But so when she pushed me in the zone, she sprayed me directly in my eye, the big can of mace, the orange can that come out. She sprayed me directly in my eye. When if I would never got to 720 on time, one of my eyes would have been out. So when I got there, they asked me who sprayed me, and I said, Cam Burke. So I had to do an incident report on her explaining what she did to me. She saw me the mess, I say 24 days. Then she came over there, and she was like, have you learned your lesson? And I'm like, yes, ma'am. And she was like, well, what was going on with your problem at home? I said, it's too late now to explain what's going on now because you saw me over here and you sprayed me in my eye. Okay, another incident happened with Cam Pollard. He's not here. I was explaining to him that I need a bottle rack because of my weight. And he was like, get the F out of my face. So I was like, well, why are you telling me like that? Because I'm grown like you. And I said, you have kids at home, and I wouldn't ever disrespect your kids if I was an officer here. So he was like, I need you to stand out there in the hall. And I was like, yes, sir. So when I went and put on my clothes, and I came back, he was like, you took too damn long. And I was like, man, you told me to go get my clothes. So I was going out the door. He pushed me out the door, and he sprayed me in my eye with a small can of mace. And then I sent me in 720. I had to put milk in my face and sugar and put ice on my face for the mace to get out of my eye. And after that, he took me to 720 that morning before he got out. So I had two incidents since I've been here, and I did not get no help. I had to write reports, and didn't nobody get back to me. So I have been sprayed twice, and it do not feel good.
Wow, that's unbelievable. So you said that you went through the proper procedure of filing against this officer, and you never received any response. Have you and the other ladies ever decided to join together in filing, you know, necessary paperwork as a group to try to, you know, combat the situation?
No, ma'am. I can do that right now. We probably can get some done. But Cam Burt is still on this building, but Cam Palmer, he is over the juvenile. So I still can do both of them. Long as I have some help, I can still do it. Because I still have my RV. I got an RVR for when Cam Burt sprayed me. But I did not get one for Cam Palmer. I did get one for Cam Burt. So now I can't get upgraded until September because the RVR that she issued me in March.
Okay, so it seems that not only are you all being physically attacked and brutalized and, you know, dehumanized, as we have stated at the beginning of the show, but you're also being written up the consequences that, you know, something you should be written up for. You know, so on these, RVRs, stories are they telling in order for them to justify writing the RVR?
Yes, ma'am. I did get an RVR, and when you get paperwork here, your time starts over. And my time starts over, so I don't get upgraded to September.
Okay. I mean, you know, this is the type of stuff that, you know, the people on the outside need to hear about because they have to understand that, you know, there are plenty of times that you all are not aggressive or, you know, confrontational with UCOs, but they have this, you know, this aura about them that will not allow them to interact with you, especially in emergency situations. And I've heard about these stories multiple times from multiple, you know, facilities in different states. You know, and
yes, ma'am.
It's unfortunate that, you know, don't have the voice that you need in order to, you know, attack the situation. And
yes,
it makes it very hard. I do understand it makes it very hard for you all to try to defend yourself, because it does not do anything but provoke them even more.
Yes, ma'am.
To retaliate against you on, you know, situations. You know, is there anyone else that we can, you know, hear from that would like to tell this story?
Miss Queen, I mean, Sister LaShawn. It's another lady. She's going to get her right now. But before she gets here, is there any callers?
No, we don't have any callers, and since you asked, but what I'm going to ask is those who are listening, we ask that you press 1, you know, if you would like to ask these ladies any questions or tell your story or even comment on what's going on tonight, you know, we ask that you press 1 and join into the build. And, LaShonda, as soon as we get some callers in, I will definitely let you know, but you can go ahead with the next young lady who would like to tell her story.
Okay, she haven't made it back yet. But before she do, I would like to say something. While I was doing research in the law book that I have, I noticed 2 things. Upon the cruel and unusual punishment in this book, it has the 8th Amendment and the 13th Amendment. Now, I don't know why the 13th Amendment would be upon a cruel and unusual punishment unless they consider the 13th Amendment to be cruel and unusual punishment. I would like to ask you all out there, if you can, to get as much information about that as possible, if it is true that the 13th Amendment is cruel and unusual, because if it is, then that's something we can fight with about slavery, prison slavery, especially you guys in Alabama.
Okay, well, hopefully we can get one of our callers to go ahead and press 1 and build on that. Me personally, I really feel that, you know, the 13th Amendment is a form of cruel and unusual punishment. You know, the slave labor, working for hours and hours on end, you know, a lot of people don't look at it as being, you know, cruel and unusual because, you know, they are prisoners of the system. However, you know, they have no idea what type of dealings you all have to deal with when you're working under slave labor. You know, what happens when the prisoners refuse to work? You know, what type of retaliation is brought about against them? You know, at what point do they have, you know, a right to say no, they will not continue to be slaves without some form of physical retaliation or other retaliation, such as losing, you know, privileges, or what they like to consider privileges for prisoners, such as visitation or, you know, being able to purchase off a commissary or making phone calls, you know, when at the end of the day, it's still another form of, you know, punishment because, I mean, look at the money that is spent, you know, that for phone calls and that you have to use in order to purchase food, you know, for snacks and stuff. And so we like to hear from some of the the callers that are listening, if they have this, have an opinion on this situation, because, you know, at any given time, this can affect any one of us. You know, we are not exempt from, you know, being placed in this type of condition. Anything can happen that can land you in prison, and therefore you will, in return, end up dealing with the same situations and the conditions that these ladies and men are dealing with when it comes to, you know, being in the prison system, along with, you know, other factors that are, you know, included into mass incarceration. So, you know, me personally, like I said, I really find it to be cruel and unusual punishment at the end of the day. The 13th Amendment really needs to be done away with. And there, you know, there should be a whole slew of people, you know, addressing this issue, because, you know, a lot of people have allowed this to just, you know, basically, you know, not be discussed. You know, it's been swept under the rug, you know, and we have, you know, talked to multiple people about this, about the 13th Amendment and what they, you know, what do they know about the 13th Amendment. You'll be surprised of how many people don't understand the details of the 13th Amendment and what it means and how it could affect them you know, in the long run. So, you know, LaShonda, since you did propose that question, why don't you go ahead and give us your take on how the 13th and the 8th Amendment, you think, go hand in hand? And I'll peace with that. LaShonda? LaShonda, are you still with us?
I'm sorry, there you are. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead, okay.
I'm sorry, the phone was on mute.
I had proposed a question to LaShonda, but you could very well answer the question. I don't know if you heard what she said, but she basically had asked the question about, you know, how the 13th Amendment and the 8th Amendment go hand in hand, you know, that she's read this in a book. And my personal opinion is I think that they do go hand in hand. So I wanted to hear from you ladies, those who really are experiencing no cruel and unusual punishment and who have fallen under the 13th Amendment, how do you think, you know, these two go hand in hand?
Actually, I agree with you entirely because, I mean, it's been established throughout history, well, throughout modern history at the very least, that, you know, slavery is definitely cruel and unusual punishment for, you know, myriad reasons. And I think Sister LaShonda and I can agree on this point. Slavery is one of the worst things that you can do to a person. You know, the oppression of the mind and the body is the best way to destroy, you know, a people as a whole. And if the 8th Amendment says, you know, you cannot treat people truly or cruelly, I'm sorry, or unjustly, then of course slavery would be, you know, would fall under that. And we here are working, most of us work at various jobs, some of them, most of them really, menial labor jobs, you know, hard physical labor, some that women are not necessarily best suited for. Myself, I worked in the laundry for many, many months, and the laundry, I don't know if it's similar to other, you know, maybe industrial laundromats. I don't know if that even exists, but, you know, they're large machines. They hold hundreds and hundreds of pounds of clothes, and, you know, the dryers are in the same room. It's very, very hot in the summertime. Well, even before the summer even hits, it gets so hot in there, it literally takes your breath away in the summertime. You know, the summer months in here are hotter than they are in some states. I'm from the West Coast, so I was not used to this at all. But it would be, you know, well over 115, 120 degrees in there. And we were working, you know, without water, without ice, without, we finally got Gatorade, which was a little bit weird since we couldn't even get ice. But we finally got that. But we were working, you know, 8 and 10 and 15 hour days in this laundry for no pay. We are getting absolutely no compensation whatsoever. Some people get MET time for it, but myself, due to the nature of my charge, because it is a violent charge, I have to work just to earn, you know, any time off at all that is given to most people, you know, with regular charges. So I basically was enslaved in the laundry. I could have chosen not to work in the laundry, but had I done that, I would have essentially doubled my prison sentence, you know, by refusing to work. So I think that absolutely we are enslaved, and I think that working under conditions like the ones that I personally was working under, in addition to the ones that, you know, the girls work under in, you know, in Central Kitchen, and I don't know if LaShonda has had time to tell you about those working conditions, but girls routinely come out of there with burn marks on them and broken bones and, you know, from dropping pallets because, you know, they're ill-advised how to use the equipment, and they have forklift operators who are, you know, not educated on how to actually operate the forklifts, and so things fall and people land, you know, are underneath them when they land, and, you know, it's very difficult to get to medical to get treated for these things, and, you know, they send them back into work with, you know, half their forearm skin scalded off, and, you know, they're also not getting paid, and so to my understanding, that definitely falls under slavery, and moreover falls under cruel and unusual punishment. You take someone to a place and burn them and break their bones and then force them back the next day, for more of the same, I think absolutely that's cruel and unusual punishment. So in that sense, I do think that the 8th and the 13th Amendment go hand in hand. What are your thoughts on this? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes. Like I said, you know, I, you know, personally I have not had the experience or anything or have been to prison or jail to know exactly what it feels like, you know, and to be able to speak from personal experience. But as a human, you know, and as a person, you know, I know that I would never want to be treated in this manner or, you know, live under certain conditions that are not, you know, human-like, you know, and to be slaved from sun up to sundown in 120 degrees, you know, temperature that is, you know, in the inside is ridiculous. You know, I want to go ahead and just read, like, Section 1 of the 13th Amendment, you know, for those who are listening and who might not understand what the 13th Amendment is about. And it says, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude. Involuntary servitude is being forced to work against your free will, even if you are paid, except as a punishment for crime. If you commit a crime, the United States can make you work as punishment for what you did, whereof the party shall be duly convicted. You have to be guilty of a crime before you can be sentenced to work against your free will. Shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Slavery cannot exist in any state in the United States or any territory or land that the U.S. might have. So, you know, basically it's the 13th Amendment has just pretty much given permission, you know, to, in a sense, mistreat people. But yet you have the 8th Amendment that tells you that you're supposed to be protected under cruel and unusual punishment. And I want to go ahead and, you know, read the, you know, the part of the 8th Amendment that talks about cruel and unusual punishment. And the cruel and unusual punishment clause is the most important and actually one of the most controversial parts of the 8th Amendment. You know, a lot of people come back and talk about the 8th Amendment and, you know, and what it means, you know. But what does it mean for a person to, for punishment to be cruel and unusual? You know, how do we measure a punishment's cruelty? You know, these are the questions that the people are asking. And if punishment is cruel, why should we care whether it is unusual? Well, at the end of the day, you should care because, I mean, people, you know, we're talking about humans. We're talking about life, you know, to disrupt the natural state of life is unusual and is cruel. You know, what gives a person a right to disrupt that? And these are the type of things that, you know, people who don't define, you know, prisoners as human, they really don't see that there's a problem with it. But, you know, being an advocate of prisoners' rights, you know, being a family member of people who are incarcerated, you know, I refuse to accept that. And those who are incarcerated refuse to accept that. So, you know, this is something that's important that we all need to build on and take in consideration. You know, is the 13th Amendment considered to be cruel and unusual punishment? And my answer to that is yes. And I'm wondering if any of the other ladies have, you know, an opinion on, you know, both of these amendments, if they would like to speak on that. And I'll yield with that. Excuse me. Is there anyone that wants, you know, to offer their opinion or concern about it?
I would like to say, I think I heard you say a minute ago that, you know, a lot of people on the outside feel that, you know, we're kind of deserving of what we get in here as it's supposed to be our punishment for our crimes, right?
Yes, yes, I've seen it. I've seen posts on Facebook where, you know, we have discussed on topics regarding cruel and unusual punishment in the 13th Amendment. And you'll be, you know, I won't say that you should be surprised, but, you know, people are really cruel themselves about the things that they say. And some of the things that I've read are unbelievable, you know. They could care less whether you all are suffering in these conditions, you know. So I want you all to explain to these people, you know, even though they might appear to not care, what do you think that you can actually tell them to convince them otherwise? Because, mind you, this is how, you know, you are living every day. They don't live this life every day. They, you know, they don't have this experience. And I always tell people, never say never when it comes to becoming incarcerated, because the prime example that I always use and I will continue to use is if you can get in your car to go to the store to pick up, you know, a few simple things from your family from the grocery store, get into a horrible accident and kill someone and be charged with vehicular homicide. You had no intention of killing anyone. All you were trying to do was go to the store and pick up a few things for your family, and before you know it, you're sitting in jail facing charges for vehicular homicide. And you could have very well been a law-abiding citizen. Now you are facing time. Would you actually feel this way, you know, once you cross over that line and you enter those gates? You know, the whole dynamics will begin to change. So, you know, I always try to bring that point out to people because I need them to understand that this can happen to us. You know, we don't always seek out to commit crimes. Sometimes we are even convicted of crimes that we did not commit and still are suffering and dealing with these type of conditions. So, you know, with that being said, I would like for you to, you know, talk to the people and tell them, you know, that, you know, this is not right. Just because I have committed a crime does not mean that I am subject to torture. So, you know, go ahead and talk to the people and give them a better understanding of what you're dealing with, and I'll peace with that.
I think you are absolutely on point with that story that you told about, you know, for example, going to the grocery store and having a horrible accident. You would not believe how many people are incarcerated for one major, you know, lapse in judgment or, like you said, an accident. I've met so many women since I've been here who are just bewildered by this experience. They don't know, you know, they're not used to the type of people, you know, that they deal with in here. They're not used to the living conditions. And, you know, they can't, a lot of women come from, you know, they were well brought up, they were well educated, and some horrible thing happened, you know, just went wrong, and there's nothing that they could have done about it. Or, you know, they say that, you know, in a certain situation, okay, say that your house catches on fire, you know, you should do this response. Well, that's not necessarily, everyone doesn't have the same response. You know, everyone's response to, you know, finding someone in trouble is not to call 911. Some people call their best friend, you know, to come and help. Some people call their parents, call the parents of the person. Some people don't do anything. They just stand there in shock. You know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, you know, say, you know, just for example, our kitchen caught fire. There was about five of us sitting there, and I said, you know, what would you guys do? And my response, you know, I'd go in and grab something that I wanted to keep and run out. One person said, oh my God, I would die. One person said, well, I'd call the fire department. One person said, oh my gosh, I don't know what I would do. And I mean, I think that's a perfect example. You don't know what would happen in any given situation until you're actually in it. What you think that you might do is not what you might do. And there are so many women here who have been, like I said, law-abiding citizens their entire lives, who would never have imagined that they would have ended up in a place like this. But yet, you know, here they are. And I think that it's really, you know, we need to work on changing the mindset of the populace, really, because so many people think that people who are in prison or people who are, you know, who are convicted felons, you know, fit the stereotype of, you know, dirty, uncivilized, you know, impossible to work with people who are just, you know, what you would think of as just bad people. But they're not bad people. I mean, I won't even get into the fact of there's no such thing as good and bad people. You know, there's so many variations in between. But people come from everywhere and land in prison, you know, everywhere. Like, I know people in the free world that I found out they're convicted felons, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my God. And, you know, I've been on both sides of the law. When I was a kid, you know, I was abused by my father, which I'm sure is a cliched story, but it's true. He went to prison. He did 10 years in prison, and at the time, as, you know, a child who had no idea, you know, how prison was or how real life was or what real, you know, just, you know, justified consequences were. I felt like he should have spent the rest of his life in prison, you know? I felt like that was fair. Then I grew up, and I went to prison. And like you said, we're living this every day. You know, one day in prison is, I can't even describe, you know, the mental agony that it puts down on you. It's like you're constantly walking under a weight. You know, you never feel like you're safe. You never feel like at the end of the day, you know, you're going to be taken care of. People think, well, you go to prison, you know, you have three meals a day and somewhere to sleep. Well, yeah, and you know what? Anything could happen. Somebody might shit in your food. they might run out of food and you not get any. Somebody might light your mat on fire. You know, anything can happen. This is not an environment where people can just be like, oh yeah, I'm glad I'm here. You know, and amazingly, some people are glad that they're here because their life out there was so much worse, which is a whole other subject altogether. But you know, like you said, people say all kinds of horrible things. I can't even imagine what they say on the internet. I know that At my sentencing, one of the victim's family members stood up and said, "I hope you rot in that cold, miserable hell for the rest of your life for what you did. You're a monster and you feel no remorse." I had cried every day. I spent 2 years in the county jail. I cried every day of those 2 years for what I had done, for the life that was lost, for my life that was lost, for the way that my family was going to be affected that I had just gotten back into contact with. That day in court, I was frozen. I was petrified. I was watching what last little bit of my future I had disappear. And she took that to be remorselessness, which I've tried to put myself in her shoes and see how she could see that, and I guess what she saw was nothing. And I know how she, I don't know exactly how she felt because my situation was not the same as hers, but I know what it feels like to be victimized by a person and, you know, have the law come down and hope that the law, you know, basically tortures that person for the rest of their life, but that's not right. You can't say what should be done to a person until you've lived, they don't, until you know what an impact this type of place has on people. You can't say how much time they should do or hope that they should do more or think that it's okay when they get worse. There was one time when I was at a different facility before I was transferred to this one. An officer came in late in the evening one time and apologized to us for the fact that our mail was going to be disrupted and wouldn't come in the next day. And that, so many people were so touched by that, myself included, because that was the first time that an officer had ever apologized for an inconvenience on us. You know, that doesn't happen in here. More often than not, we are treated, the language used toward us is degrading and derogatory. I'm sure Sister LaShonda has described our living conditions at least somewhat. We live in a warehouse. You know, our windows are barred. You can't look outside without, you know, being reminded constantly that you have no chance of going anywhere or doing anything on your own. And people need to realize the impact that that has on the human mindset and realize that normal people go to prison. It's not bad people that go to prison. Good people, normal people, grandparents, children, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, cousins, everyone can be in a situation where something goes horribly wrong. And like you said, suddenly you're facing criminal charges and all you wanted to do was buy some oranges at the store. So with that, I'm going to give you to Sister LaShonda. I know she's dying to talk. So here you go. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, we have any callers, Queen Dar?
At the present time, we don't have any callers. And like I said, I want to encourage those who are listening to please press one, you know, add a comment, ask a question of these ladies, you know, or even tell your own personal story, you know, because what we're doing here is a real situation here. Before, LaShonda, did you want to introduce, you know, I'd just like to bring out a couple of things that that you might even be able to build on. I did a show once before on the behalf of incarcerated women, and some of the points that I have brought up, some people were totally amazed by because they had never heard of such things. And if you don't mind me speaking, I'm going to bring these situations up because it just kind of falls under the cruel and unusual punishment. That there were women who have been shackled to beds during labor, you know, pregnant women who are incarcerated, shackled to beds, women who have had babies on the floor of the cells, which I had, you know, heard about this story out of Mississippi about a year ago, you know, women that are brutally raped by the correctional officers, you know, these type of things, you know, which even shocked me. One was birth control being administered inside the prison walls, you know, and a lot of people say, well, why would they need birth control, you know, inside the prison walls? And that's my point. Why would they need this? You know what I'm saying? What are they trying to hide? What are they covering up? So I know that you have other things that you want to bring up, but I would ask that you, you know, if you heard these stories or, you know, or anyone who has experienced these type of situations, you know, to go ahead and talk about those things, if you will. And I'll deal with that.
Yeah, well, as far as the women here being raped or whatnot, I don't know anything about that. You know, I know that there are plenty of times that it's consensual, you know, but as far as them being raped, you know, they do it and then they scream rape. But as far as, you know, like I said, that's you know, these are a bunch of lonely women, you know, and first man paying some attention, don't matter if this is a guard or not, they're gonna do what they got to do, and if they get caught, they're going to scream rape. But as far as them being raped, I haven't heard any stories about it. Now I have heard stories about the females raping the females, you know, and sticking these objects in them and whatnot. But as far as the guards, you know, and I've been here 18 years, and I haven't heard any stories like that, Queen Dar.
Okay, yeah, I know that it might not happen in every facility in every state, but I know that it was an issue that was really big and out of the state of Alabama concerning the women that were incarcerated at Tutwiler. So, you know, when I did this show, this is, you know, one of the points that I have brought up to a listening audience to, you know, heighten their awareness. And I'm pretty sure that it doesn't happen in every women's facility, but I was just curious to know if, you know, if you heard any stories of such. And, you know, including some of the other things that I had mentioned on the list. But, you know, go ahead and continue to build. And I'll peace.
Yeah, and but I guess, you know, consensual sex, you know, to want, you know, better conditions or to be moved here or moved there or have this done, I guess that could be considered rape if you look at it, you know, because it was a mad thing. You had to play on the mental emotion of someone that's lonely to them to consent to do these things. But, yeah. Have you heard anything since then?
I was thinking about the guy that works in the kitchen, you know, he'll bring in, you know, pain pills. There are a lot of women who can't get the pain medication that they need, you know, because it's just not offered by the prison. And he'll bring it in for them, you know, for some hits. He'll bring it in, you know, for a titty show or something like that. You know, he'll bring you what you need. And so it's technically consensual and that these women are doing these things without being physically forced to do it. But they're doing it, you know, in order to get things that they need that they cannot otherwise get. And so their situation is, in effect, forcing them, you know, into what can only be classified as prostitution, which may not be considered rape by standard, by most standards, but at the same time, if you have no choice but to do something in order to get what you need to make it through the day, I feel like that could be classified as rape also.
Keith, I do agree, you know, because like you said, they're playing on the mental status of that individual, you know, and it's been, you know, often said that sometimes women have to do what they have to do, and men likewise, you know, I won't disregard the men either. However, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about, you know, men that are, you know, literally still forcing themselves on you all without, you know, even though some people might look at it as being consensual. How consensual is it when you play on someone's weakness? You know what I'm saying? Basically, it's a form of manipulation, you know? So I'm glad that you actually brought that point up because it's very important that people understand that rape isn't always just a physical attack. And then, you know, in these conditions, you know, me personally, I would argue the point that these women are still being raped, and I'll peace with that.
I agree with what you just said. You know, if a lot of these women in here are mentally unstable, you know, if you could just see these women in here and the things that they do for attention, you know, then you will know that we need some serious help in here. Especially for those that's addicted to drugs, because they would do any and everything with any and everybody to receive that high. And it's sad, it's sickening, you know, because I'm housed with 116 people in one zone, and I can say about 108 of them is addicted to drugs. You know, they're either shooting up or snorting ice or whatever, you know, and they need help. You know, they are mentally unstable, and they need as much help as they possibly can get. Otherwise, they're going to continue to have consensual rape, sex, and everything else just to feed that addiction. It's sickening. And I think Sister Dane want to say something in regards to that. Let's go.
And like she said, you know, these women who are mentally unstable, they don't have the right responses, you know, response actions to things. They don't have the right coping mechanisms. You know, people who, you know, at home might have been alcoholics, you know, come in and they can't get their alcohol, but they desperately, you know, need something to get through the day. They're afraid to get on psych meds because, you know, they don't want it to go on their record and mess up their, you know, their record, their free world record. My dad brought that to my attention, which was strange. And, you know, get addicted to, you know, injecting drugs because there are just as many street drugs in here, you know, as there are out there. They're just more expensive. You know, I can't even tell you how many girls I've met in here that are needle addicts now that, you know, at home, you know, we're just closet alcoholics or, you know, sex addicts or, you know, they don't know how to cope and they're not given any, they, you know, there's a booklet that you get when you get here that, you know, has a rundown of all the psychotherapy that you can have access to, you know, the different varieties of counseling, the religious programs, and that's all bullshit, man. We don't have access to any of that. Like a preacher comes in once a week, you know, they have, you know, a chaplain who passes out Bibles when you ask for them, you know, Christian Bibles. They don't have, there's no variety in the religious programs offered. It's you're either Catholic, Christian, or Muslim. So if you're, you know, say Buddhist or Jewish or, you know, anything else, then you don't, there aren't any resources for you. And if you need genuine counseling, you know, you're just not going to get it. And, you know, it's more likely than anything that you're going to resort to drugs or, you know, cutting yourself or, you know, people who, you know, stopped cutting themselves when they were teenagers, you know, take it up again as adults because they don't have any other way to cope, you know, and this is not a place that you can just cope with. You have to, you know, you can't just adjust. Some people just adjust. Some people, you know, prison really just does horrible things to the mind. And I myself, a while back, a couple of months ago, when I was a kid, I was diagnosed with manic depressive disorder. They used to call it bipolar. You know, you have happy days and you have sad days. And I have really bad social anxiety. And it had gotten to the point where it just was unbearable. I couldn't stand it anymore. And I, you know, like I said earlier, I was raised to believe that the government has your back, even though I know better. That's what I thought. And so I put in a sick call and asked them to please come and help me. That, you know, I wasn't suicidal per se, but that I couldn't stand, you know, I needed some help. And they finally, a few weeks later, by which time I could have killed myself, if that were my notion, they sent me to a psychiatrist who wouldn't stop looking at the clock because it was 5 minutes till 5 p.m. And, of course, he was supposed to be getting off work. And he said, well, look, sounds like you're doing all right to me, so I'll just schedule you, you know, and come in at another time if you really think you need to, but just try to get it together, okay? And that was the help that I got on the verge of a, you know, constantly really on the verge of a nervous breakdown that I couldn't do anything else to help. I had resorted to cutting myself. I got on drugs myself, and I just, there's nothing here that's going to help you. They don't have any sort of resources for, like I said, psychological help or spiritual help. Even if you want to talk to the chaplain, you know, she's as harried as anyone else. She's got 3,000 people she's got to deal with all by herself. You know, they don't have the resources, and I don't know how much of it is their fault and how much of it is just lack of funding. But there's nothing, you know, out here that's, you know, trying to make you better. Their rehabilitation program that they spout off about is a joke. They don't have one at all. That's why people come into prison and turn around and come right back or die. You know, get into, you know, car accidents because they've gotten involved with drugs again and, you know, get into, you know, drunk driving accidents and stuff or, you know, go out and commit a worse crime and intentionally come back just because they can't hack it out there. They have not learned a better way. You know, you can't, you know, take a dog out of its cage and put it in the house and expect it to just be housebroken. No, and you put it back in the cage because, I mean, it's not going to learn any better without being taught. These people, you know, there's nothing out here to improve us. There's, you know, to take us out of a lifestyle that, you know, like I said, a lot of women come here from decent backgrounds, you know, that this was not just an inevitable destination for them. But some of us, in my case, you know, this was an inevitable destination. I had, you know, statistically, I was just an accident waiting to happen. And so I did not come here and learn a better way to live. I learned how to be better at the crappy way that I lived. you know, I know how to make meth now. I didn't know that when I came here. I mean, you know, it's just what I mean. You know, I'm surrounded by these
reals.
I'm not going to make meth. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that you take people who might have had one or two accidents or, you know, been here for like a minor infraction and were sent to prison for it and suddenly are surrounded by, you know, people like criminals in, you know, the strictest sense who can do nothing but encourage you into more and more criminal activities because that's all we know how to do. That's the only learning experience that we have access to in here is how to get worse. Well, Shonda says she disagrees, and I would like to hear this.
I totally disagree with that because, like I said, I've been here 18 years, and just because someone do it don't mean I have to do it. You know what I mean? Because I'm in control of my own facility, and if we are strong-minded and strong-willed, then just because I see you over there shooting up, you know, and you my friend, that don't mean I have to come over there. Hey, I want to be like my friend. I'm going to shoot up, you know, because my mom always told me anyone that influenced me to do drugs are not my friend. So, I mean, I totally disagree with that statement. I don't have to learn how to cook meth because you know how to cook meth. I don't have to become a chemist because you are a chemist. I can become something better. I can help rehabilitate myself if that's what I want. If I know I don't want to come back to prison, then I know I got to self-help myself. If the state ain't going to help me, then I got to self-help myself and do everything I can so I won't be a statistic or a product of my environment, you know. But it's like she said, you know, not everyone, you know, come from the background where, hey, yeah, we knew you was coming here or something like that. And a lot of people are here because they've been beat or raped, and instead of them getting help, when it happened the last time, they just went on and took somebody out the game, you know? So, I mean, it's by chance, you know? But if I want better, I'm going to do better. You know, when you know better, you do better. And I know I don't want to come back to prison, so that means I'm going to change everything about myself that's going to bring me back into this place. So I disagree with that statement that Sister Zane said about, you know, learning different things. I'm going to learn to better myself, and I'm going to learn to do different things so I won't have to come back and suffer the same thing that I already suffer because if I do what I always did, I always get what I always got. And you got to be tired of getting got. You got to start getting sometimes. So with that being said, I put Sister Zane back online to finish her statement.
I agree now with what Sister LaShonda said that, you know, you get what, you know, if you want to do better, then you do better. But at the same time, there's only so far you can go. I came into the prison system already having my GED, which that is the highest level of education that you have access to within the penitentiary. Now, I could, of my own initiative, pay astronomical sums that I don't personally have access to, you know, to take college correspondence courses. Yes, that's a possible thing, but my point is that there is no state help. But I feel like the state should offer help.
When we know that the state does not offer help, why do we continue to look for the state to help us? Why can't we help? Why can't we help each other? Why we got to wait on the state when we know the state ain't going to do it?
I mean, you're absolutely right. We do have to help ourselves. If we want any kind of improvement, we have to work for it ourselves. But after a certain point, you get kind of hopeless. I had changed
in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, then you can't get the help, you know? It's all about what you believe in. Just because, let me tell you something, just because I know the state ain't going to help me. You know, you think I'm going to beg the state to help me? I'm going to get up and I'm going to help myself. And I'm supposed to stick to where they can help me because that's what they're supposed to do. But until then, I'm going to help myself. I believe in myself. You understand what I mean? So that means I ain't going to let you do nothing to me that you ain't supposed to do because I believe in me. And I'm not going to let you just subject me to anything. That's impossible.
But I don't know. My experience, I did, like I said, even though the state only offers, you know, basically nothing, you know, you can still improve yourself to a certain degree. I had gotten to where, you know, I was voluntarily not doing drugs anymore. I wasn't cutting myself. I wasn't, you know, cussing. I was exercising. I was eating as, you know, as healthy as you can in here. I was drinking a lot of water, getting enough sleep. And I got a job as a teacher out of the school. I was teaching reading and social studies, which was something that had been unfathomable for me when I first got locked up. So I agree there is a level of improvement, you know, that you can do. But after a few years, you know, even though I was so far from where I had come, after a few years, ultimately my situation had not changed. I still was not getting out of prison. I still was not earning any more time. My situation was not improved. Okay, if anything, it was harder because, you know, the rigorous self-disciplinary measures that I was putting myself through, you know, under the, you know, the umbrella of self-improvement. And now I have fallen at this point below where I was initially. Like I said, I was clean, I was living right, and I was not getting in trouble. And after a few years, I'm now back to, well, my sister LaShawna knows my situation. I'd rather not get into it on the air, but I'm worse off now than I was when I came to prison. And I had initially seen prison, not initially, but after a few years, I managed, you know, to see prison as a place where I could step outside of that life and, you know, meditate on what I should have been doing.
Well, it's my belief that we cannot get caught up in the disillusion around here, like that this is living. This ain't living. Look around you. See,
we are.
It is where we are, but we can't get caught up in the hype. This is hype. What? Look around you. You understand what I mean? This is hype. Ain't none of this real. It's reality, but ain't none of this real to the sense I'm gonna become my environment. No.
So you're forever the odd one out. You're forever going to be the only one. You're trying to do better and treat people the way that you want to be treated. And yet at the end of the day, you're still not treated the way that you want to be treated.
It doesn't matter. That's me. I am who I am.
So you're
not what I never be. I'm me.
So you're working incessantly to create a better environment that does not come to fruition.
That's my calling. That's my purpose. That's my job. I'm going to be what my calling and my job is. That's what's in my heart. I'm not going to belittle somebody because they belittle me. I'm not going to degrade you because you degrade me. No, that's not who I am. I have my own mind. You understand what I mean? I don't have to. If I do that because you're doing it, then that's me being you. I ain't trying to be you. I'm trying to be me. You know, my image ain't yours. You know what I mean? I have my own. You know, and once everyone develops into their own individuality, then we won't have to worry about the peer pressure. Oh, because she don't talk to me. Okay, your conversation ain't down there. No way. You understand what I mean? You have to develop into your own person. You have to have knowledge of who you are. And then you won't have to worry about whether this person don't like it. Who cares? You understand what I mean? As long as you do everything you can to better your circumstance, your condition, your environment, as long as you do everything in your power to encourage and help and motivate the next man to become better than what they is, better than what they were yesterday, then, hey, that is your blessing. That is you. You understand what I mean? I can't be you. I can only be me. And me is love, life, loyalty, baby.
Sister LaShawna, I believe you are in the right line of work in your life. Absolutely. That was the most positively motivational thing that I have ever heard. I've never been quite roasted like that with such positivity. So, on that note, I don't even know what to say. Are there any callers? Is anyone?
No, currently we don't have any callers, but what we're going to do is we're going to go to a small break. And before we go to this break, I would just like to say to the both of you, LaShawna, you keep continuing with the mind frame that you have and help build not only Zane, but others around you. You know, Zane, at the end of the day, you do have a point. The state should be doing something to help lower the recidivism rate, you know, by providing some type of services. So this is why we have to hold the state and those who are in charge accountable for their lack of action. So, you know, I would just want to encourage everybody that's still listening, if you would like, please press 1. We would like to hear from you. So we're going to take a small break, and we'll be right back. LaShawna is saying, please hold the line.
Put this on YouTube.
Yeah.
You heard this, dude.
I believe our greatest need as a people is to educate our youth. I believe that we need to move from all of the individuals and groups who are doing great things in their communities to uplift kids through better education, but we need to move from fragmentation to consolidation to coalition. They are simply products that help to create awareness.
Anytime you can put a symbol on a t-shirt that symbolizes unity,
That's what we're doing.
Something for people to rally around. I use the colors of red, black, and green to reconnect African-American youth with their culture. How do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been and what you've been through as a people? At best, we are strongest together. And in that sense, I am driven and passionate about talking to as many people and groups all over this country who, again, want to help to maximize the mission, want to help to move forward our kids with better educational opportunities.
Peace and blessings. I would like to welcome everyone back to tonight's segment on Sign of the Times of Stop Dehumanizing Us Through Cruel and Unusual Punishment. And before we went on break, you know, the ladies were actually, I want to say building, you know what I'm saying, because it's going to take, you know, an open discussion such as in order to, you know, change the mindset and, you know, in order to try to change the conditions that they're under. So I would like to welcome back, you know, LaShonda and Zane. Are you ladies still in the host queue?
Hello?
Peace, yes. We've got about, you know, 15 minutes or so left of the show, so I wanted to go ahead and squeeze this in real quick, if you don't mind. I want you to all, to, you know, tell the people, you know, or give us some ideas on out on the those who are on the outside and those who are advocating for you all's rights, you know, what else can we do to help you all? Because I know that it's hard to combat the system, especially when they don't look at you as being a human. So what can we do on the outside to help aid and assist you ladies and other ladies that are incarcerated and men also with the situations and the, you know, conditions that you're dealing with? And I'll go ahead and allow you all to answer that, and I'll piece with that.
Well, I mean, the best thing that you can do is keep up the work that we're already doing. You know, get the word out there. Let people know that we are people. We have the same feelings, the same life experiences as the people out there. And, you know, a lot of the times, an unbelievable amount of time, it is just happenstance that lands us here. You know, like I said before, I can't say the point, stress the point enough. The people who go to prison are not bad people. People do not commit crimes because they're bad people. They don't, you know, get convicted of felonies, even violent felonies, because they're bad people. So many times they were in the wrong place at the wrong time and made the wrong choice. And like I said, you can't say what kind of choice you would make until you're in the situation. Sometimes we did just make the wrong decision. But a lot of times, you know, people were on drugs and not in their right minds. You know, as Sister LaShonda said, you know, people are not necessarily mentally stable. A lot of people here are on different medication and, you know, were already seeking or actively receiving psychiatric help when they got here. And that might make it sound like we're different from the general population, but we're not, because you forget how many people out there are on medication. You know, Prozac is a cliche now because, you know, everybody takes Prozac, right? I mean, not really, but you know what I mean.
But the thing about it is, it's not that people are only different medication. Everyone is doing this to feel human because they have been dehumanized. You know, they have been dehumanized to the point so bad to where everyone is like parasites. I'm going to latch on you and I'm going to suck because you look like you got going on. You look happy. You know, you look like, yeah, everybody's walking around like zombies because no one feels human anymore. And if you look like you're more human than me, then I'm going to latch on to you and I'm going to suck the life out of you because you look like you're happy. So if everyone has been programmed, they have been dehumanized to not even feel alive anymore. Right.
She's exactly right. People come in here, you can tell, you know, a person who just got here versus a person who has been locked up for 5-10 years, because the person who just got here, you know, they're still filled with life and, you know, are expecting to be treated kindly and, you know, to interact with the world the way that the world actually runs. And, you know, the people who have been here for a while, like I said, they're like zombies. You know, they walk around, you know, looking at what life they can suck from other people because they have none of their own left because the system has taken it from them. And like I said, just get the word out there that we are still here. We are still alive. We have not disappeared. And we need your help. We need your love still. We need to know that we're not forgotten. We need to be reminded, you know, of how people actually treat each other and how people actually speak to each other and how people actually care about each other because, you know, there are no role models in here except for each other. And, you know, we're constantly degraded a little bit more every day. What little bit of humanity we do have left is, you know, it's almost like they're making a concentrated effort to take it from us, you know, to make sure that we know that we're not people, but we are. We are the same people that we were when we got here, only a little rougher, you know, and I don't even want to say it's not fair, but it's not fair because they want us to come out and do better, and we want to come out and do better, but it's so hard to do that, and it gets harder all the time because less and less we're able to. I remember when I first came here, there was something that had happened between some inmates and a guard. We don't have time to get into the particulars, but I was appalled by it, and I wrote about it in my journal, and I was reading back over my journal. This was several years ago. I was reading back over my journal the other day, though, and I saw it, and I was surprised at how appalled I'd been because it's such a commonplace thing. We don't have any standard against which to measure our lives now. You know, before, when we first get here, we know what real life is supposed to be like and what people are supposed to be like and how we're supposed to treat each other. And then we come here and are treated badly. And you know, we're treated badly by the guards. So in turn, we treat each other with that that same disrespect because, you know, it's a trickle down. It's an endless cycle. And we don't, like I said, we don't have any standard to measure our actions by. You would think that we could measure it against the guards because they're the ones who go home every day. But instead, they're the ones who are inspiring this negativity on our part. And, you know, remind us what we're supposed to be like. Remind us who we are. Remind us that we are still people and that people love us and that we are supposed to still love each other and care about each other and that this is not reality. That's the biggest thing in my mind. Remind us. Know that this is not the world, that there is a world out there. There are people that love us out there and care about us and want us to do better and want to see us come home because sometimes it's so easy to lose sight of that. It's so easy to forget that there even is a home out there. And I'm going to give that to LaShonda. Queen Dar.
Yes, I'm still here. Thank you, Zane. Thank you, Zane, for your bill tonight. LaShonda, you want to go ahead and add on to that?
No, she summed everything up quite well. You know, just for the listeners and, you know, the guys and the women in the other facilities that may be listening, you know, I just want to say that just because our environment is a particular way doesn't mean that we have to be that way. We have to be the leaders, you know. We have to be the one to show others a better way. How can we help them if we are the one hurting them? You know, if we want to better our surroundings, we want people to not be dehumanized and walk around like zombies or to carry themselves like vicious animals. You know, we lead by example. Everyone in your environment is looking for that one person that has it all together, that is mentally, physically. Everything about this individual speaks life. It speaks liberty. I'm talking about everything about this person is what others want to be more like, not to be you, but to grasp just a little of what you got going on as long as it's positive and productive. You know, and we have to stop, we as people, we have to stop hurting those around us so that they can become a better person. We have to help each other help each other. You know, I have to help you help me, you know. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but in a way where you can carry yourself like a young man, or she can carry herself like a young lady, and she can instead of going and get this kind of book that's not putting any knowledge in her, she'll go and pick up a constitutional book or some kind of law book, something that's going to educate them mentally. Excuse me, I think Sister Zane got something she want to say in regards to that because she keeps interrupting me. Hold on.
I was making comments about what sort of book she could pick up. She said a book of, you know, constitutional book I wanted to put in. You can pick up poetry or, you know, start writing music or, you know, just on the vein that she was talking about, you know, keeping positive, you know, things in your mind and, you know, not reading garbage. You know, they say you put garbage in, you get garbage out, right? So, here she is.
Right. So, if what we put inside of us, you know, it's how we conduct ourselves, you know. That's just like the story about the two gods living in us. The one you feed is the one that wins, you know. And if I can't put anything educational or spiritual in me, then I am what they say I am, you know, because I can't do anything better. I won't open my mind up to become better. You know, I have to help better myself. You know, I know I can't do it all by myself. It takes a higher power, you know, to really fully change an individual, but I can contribute to what I can in bettering myself. So with that, I peace with that, Queen Garden.
That's me. Well, you know, I want to go ahead and add this to close out the build, that, you know, at the end of the day, those who are listening, please do understand that, you know, even though these ladies are incarcerated, they are still human. They are still mothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, grandmothers, you name it, you know, and they are the givers of life. And they deserve to have a life despite their conditions. You know, we have got to work diligently as a unit to try to help support them and be their voice, because they cannot speak for themselves on many occasions. And as long as we continue to allow this to happen, we will see, you know, many of our people go through this system and come out even worse than what they are. It is up to us as the people on the outside to speak up for them. These conditions are not going to change by themselves, and we are going to have to work collectively from the inside out and from the outside in to face these conditions. These ladies deserve to be treated like humans. They are sentenced to time and not torture. So with that being said, I'd like to thank all of our callers for joining us tonight, because you could have been anywhere on this Saturday evening instead of listening to what's going on here. And I really appreciate the ladies of the MDLC being brave enough to come, you know, to come online and discuss their issues, their stories. And I would like to offer some words to you ladies to, you know, seek inside yourself, you know what I'm saying? Learn your inner self. Gain knowledge of yourself. And when you gain that knowledge of yourself, the fear goes away, and it will help you to fight these conditions that you're dealing with. It will help you to better yourself. You know, you deserve to be treated like a human, and you are a human. As far as I'm concerned, you will always be human, and you are the givers of life, and I want you to continue to live life as much as possible. You know, we are out here fighting for you ladies. We have much love for you ladies, and we will continue to, you know, press the issue about these cruel and unusual punishment. I will also like to thank Queen Tahira and the Sign of the Times for allowing us to use this platform to bring these issues to light. You know, with that being said, I bid everyone peace and blessings, and everyone have a good evening.
Something for my godson Elijah and a little girl named Corinne. To say the black of the best, the sweet of the juice. I say the dark of the flesh and the deep of the roots. I give a holler to my sisters on welfare. Tupac can, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. And when you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. Forgive, but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need him. And I ain't trying to gash up, I just call him how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? When brothers make mates and leave a young mother to be unhappy. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman. I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where.
meant to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, lady, but keep your head up. I remember Marvin Gaye used to sing to me. He had me feeling like black was the thing to be. And suddenly the ghetto didn't seem so tough. And though we had it rough, we always had enough. I hopped up off about my curfew and broke the roof. Went with the local crew and had a smoke or two. I realized mama really paid the price. She nearly gave her life to raise me right. And all I had to give her was my life dream. Now how about the life and make it to the right screen? I'm trying to make it. Last night, my buddy lost his whole family. It's gonna take the man in me to conquer this fantasy. It seems the rain will never let up. I try to keep my head up and still keep from getting wetter. You know what's funny? When it rains, it pours. They got money for wars, but can't feed the poor. Said it ain't no hope for the youth, and the truth is, it ain't no hope for the future. And then they wonder why we crazy. I blame my mother for turning my brother into a crack baby. We ain't meant to survive, cause it's a setup. Never let up, but please, you gotta keep your head up.